Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And a very good morning to you on this Thursday, March the 31st. Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, the Central African Republic's new president, Faustin Archange Touadéré, promises to end years of violent turmoil.
One of the strengths he actually brings to the job is that he is not a particularly partisan figure.
And one of the many challenges facing South Sudan's transitional government of national unity on seeking to rebuild the country's shattered economy.
There has been leakages in the system from the tax and from the taxation side. So you need to continue to improve tax.
Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
The United Nations said late on Wednesday that new, extremely troubling allegations had emerged of sexual abuse by UN and French peacekeepers in the Central African Republic. The UN Security Council is to hear a report on the allegations later today. Meanwhile, the Central African Republic itself now has a new president, Faustin Archange Touadéré. He takes over a country with a difficult past, as we hear now from Fred Mavuni and Joanne Akito.
The former French colony of Bangui Shari became the Central African Republic after independence in 1960.
After three disorderly decades of misrule, mostly by military governments, civilian rule was established in 1993, but it only lasted a decade.
In March 2003, President Ange-Félix Patassé was deposed in a military coup led by General François Bozizé, who established a transitional government.
Elections held in 2005 affirmed General Bozizé as president. He was re-elected in 2011 in an election widely viewed as flawed.
Several rebel groups joined forces in early December 2012 to launch a series of attacks that left them in control of numerous towns in the northern and central parts of the country.
The rebels fighting Bozizé's government participated in peace talks in early January 2013, which resulted in a coalition government that included rebel leaders.
In March 2013, the coalition government dissolved and the Sereka Mosri Muslim seized the capital. President Bozizé fled the country. After seizing power, some of the rebels went rogue and embarked on a campaign of killing, raping, and looting.
In the same year, 2013, Seleka rebel leader Michel Djotodia became the first Muslim president of the CAR. He later established a National Transitional Council and disbanded the Seleka rebel movement in January 2014.
The move fueled human rights abuses by the predominant Muslim rebels, prompting members of the Christian majority to form vigilante groups. They, in turn, unleashed a wave of brutal revenge killings that left thousands dead and a million people displaced.
In January 2014, French-trained lawyer and mayor of the capital Bangui, Catherine Samba Panza, was elected by parliament to be the interim president. However, her transitional government, regional and international peacekeepers struggled to halt the fighting and disarm the militias.
Panza's transitional mandate expired after President Faustin Archange Touadéré was elected. Nevertheless, the new president has no parliament in place.
At least 1,800 candidates are contesting for 105 seats in the National Assembly in an election scheduled this Thursday. Almost 2 million people have registered to vote, out of an estimated population of 4.7 million.
Joanne Akito and Fred Mabuni. The Central African Republic has seen 3 years of communal violence between Muslim and Christian militias. The violence has left thousands dead and displaced more than 400,000 people. During his swearing-in ceremony, President Touadéré pledged to preserve peace and to shun ethnic bias. Jane Ayeko asked Paul Melly from Chatham House in the UK whether he thought the new president could bring stability to the country.
One of his personal strengths is a rather low-key, practical style. When he was previously in government as prime minister after 2008, he had a very pragmatic, unfussy approach that really concentrated on things that would make a difference to people's everyday life. For example, restoring the regular payment of civil service salaries. So one of the strengths he actually brings to the job is that he is not a particularly partisan figure. And to deliver security, he's going to have to rely very heavily on the international forces.
Critics argue that Touadéré's link to deposed ruler François Bozizé could hurt his reputation. What's your take on this one?
There's no particular evidence to suggest that Mr. Touadéré had anything to do with that. He seems to have been recruited as prime minister essentially to focus on what you might call civil administration matters. So the economy, running public services, that sort of thing. And the CAR hasn't had in recent decades any leader of unimpeachable democratic good governance and capable governance potential, not really since the Kalimba regime, and that was authoritarian. And so pretty much most of the political class have at one time or another been associated with governments that were, shall we say, not perfect. But the country nevertheless has maintained a degree of civilian functional politics. But actually the political class has not been associated with any kind of tyrannical or massively authoritarian government. And Mr. Touadéré, in a way, is probably one of the more reformist and pragmatic politicians.
Now, as you may be aware, Touadéré won the presidential election with a clear majority, but we know that parliament is yet to be formed. Do you foresee a parliament ready to work with him, or one that makes his work rather tough?
I think a lot will depend on how he assembles his ministerial team. Many of the defeated candidates supported Mr. Touadéré in the runoff round of the election. And he will be seeking to build an alliance that brings together many of these figures into his new government, and therefore should bring their parliamentary support base with it.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
In South Sudan, people are finding it hard to survive as the prices of basic consumer commodities like sugar and salt continue to rise. The world's youngest country is struggling to control inflation, which has been caused by the civil war, rampant corruption, and the near collapse of the oil industry. Walker Simon Wudu reports from the capital, Juba.
Benai Doku works as a social worker, government employee in a health center in Kajokeji, a suburb 75 miles from the capital, Juba. As a breadwinner for a family of eight, Doku says the economic crisis is threatening his family's survival. Prices of consumer commodities and services have risen in recent months. Doku says he has been forced to forego some essential requirements.
A family can just survive without sugar, and majorly things like the salt and the soap, I think, can force one to go off. Secondly, I think certain commodities, like when you go to things like clothing, you know, some basic needs which can be seized off, I think at the moment I've closed them.
Conflict broke out in South Sudan in December 2013, subsequently affecting the economy, especially the country's only export oil. Attempts by government to devalue the country's currency, the South Sudanese pounds last December, has still worsened the situation.
To alleviate this situation, the government has to reduce the revenue taxes within the borders. And, you know, when a lot of things are brought in, and then life becomes easy. Like if food commodities, the essential goods are available with the low prices, things will normalize.
Early last year, Doko says he used to buy a kilogram of sugar at 6 South Sudanese pounds, a bar of soap at 7 South Sudanese pounds, and a 5 liter of cooking oil at 25 South Sudanese pounds. Today, prices of these products have more than tripled. Guya Sevia is a businessman in Kajukeji Market. He imports his goods and services from neighboring Uganda. Sevia says some of his business mates have so far closed down their businesses because they cannot afford to sustain them. One of the many factors he explains is challenge in acquiring foreign currency like the US dollars needed to purchase goods elsewhere. He also says high taxes levied by custom officials on the imports are responsible for the hiking of the prices.
Formerly, we used to clear goods in between 6,000 to 10,000. That is a truck of only 15 or 14 tons. If you have a lorry, then you clear between 12 to 18. But this time, it is double or even triple. You find a lorry of, say, 14 tons is being cleared for 29,000 or even 30.
Sevier thinks government's poor and corrupt ways of allocating U.S. dollars to traders make the dollars go into wrong hands of traders. He says there is a need for change of this practice. James Garang is a senior economist with the South Sudan think tank Ebony Center for Strategic Studies. He says government needs to review its policies to refurbish the current economic situation.
There are incremental steps that can be taken. One is this idea from the transitional government of national unity. There has been leakages in the system from the tax and from the taxation side. So you need to continue to improve tax administration, revenue authority bill. This thing needs to be passed as soon as possible so that you give that authority a mandate to collect taxes in an improved manner.
And that report was compiled by Walker Simon Wudu in Juba. Rights groups have accused the government of Rwanda of stifling the media and the opposition. In a latest development, media workers in the country have called for changes in the law, which would remove the constant threat of criminal prosecution when going about legitimate business. From Kigali, Nasra Bashumba reports.
Rwandan journalists will this week begin talks with the Law Reform Commission to push for changes to the laws governing their profession. Under the Rwanda Journalists Association, the media fraternity is seeking changes, including the decriminalization of the defamation law. The association's executive secretary, Gonza Muganwa, told DW why the group was pushing for self-regulation.
We don't want a punishment or the threat of jail appearing or hanging over when a journalist is doing their work.
Mugano and his associates are lobbying for the removal of any law which allows for the seizure of journalistic equipment or at least to specify when and why such seizures could be permitted. This would in turn protect the confidentiality of journalists and their sources.
Usually, even if the media or journalist is not found guilty, there's a possibility that they can be detained in a pre-trial detention. Their offices can be stormed.
Ivan Mugisha, a journalist with the East African newspaper, was recently searched by police. His computer and phone were confiscated and he was later detained for publishing a story about corruption in Rwanda. Mugisha shared his views with DW about the need for changes in the law.
If the law indeed changes, it will make the work of journalists in Rwanda very easy, and it, now defamation is a criminal case. That means if you're taken to court, you have a criminal case on your file. I think it's a good thing for the country as a whole. If this also goes into effect, at least it will take off some pressure from the international community.
Many Rwandan journalists believe that if these changes go into effect, it would make their work easier from a legal standpoint. It would also deflect some of the criticism coming from the international community in relation to Rwanda's continued pressure on media institutions.
Nasra Bashumba with that report. And now, as always on a Thursday, a second chance to hear this week's instalment of Crime Fighters.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello and welcome to Crime Fighters Land of Chongwe, a radio drama about land grabbing in Africa. This is the sixth episode called Putting the Pieces Together. In the last episode, flower farm worker Zamari was busy mobilizing several young people. They're planning to retake the land that once belonged to their families. It was first taken away from them by Chief Awombo. Then the government gave it to the foreign company Roses International. Meanwhile, Private Detective Mweri has been hitting a brick wall in her investigation into Chief Awombo's death. Despite receiving death threats, Mweri hasn't given up. Now she's visiting Pambo in his police cell. Pambo found Chief Awombo's body together with Zimari, and he's now the main suspect.
Don't mind the jailbirds, Mweri. Pambo's cell is right at the end. He still refuses to tell me anything even after I release his friend.
Zumari's out? Since when?
Since 2 days ago. He told me he knew nothing about the chief's disappearance or death. I believed him, and I set him free. Pambo's the one who called to inform me when he discovered Awombo's body. Pambo, you have a visitor. Mweri, 5 minutes. That's all you've got.
Thank you, Inspector Mwamto.
Mweri, I swear on my father's grave, I did not kill Chief Awombo. Zumari betrayed me. We both found the chief's...
Keep your voice down, Pambo. Just tell me the truth. When was the last time you saw Chief Awombo alive?
It was the day before he was reported missing.
What? You saw Chief Awombo the day before he disappeared? Where?
At the Rose Farm. Yes, I remember now. We worked overtime that day. And as we were leaving, the chief was coming out of Mr. Gamble's office. You know, the owner of the farm.
What do you mean by we? Who else was there?
Zumari and me. The rest of the workers had all gone home. I remember the chief looked very angry.
What happened? Tell me what happened next. Where did the chief go? Was anyone following him?
No, there was no one following them.
Them? You mean the chief and Mr. Gamble?
No, I mean Chief Awombo and Zumari. Zumari offered to walk the chief home. I went home alone that day.
Pambo, did Zumari's family lose land that was given to Chief Awombo?
Yes, but so did my family and many others. People said it was a gift to the chief for his role in the struggle for independence.
Oh my goodness, that's it?
That's what?
Don't you get it? Zumari's family loses land to Chief Awombo, and...
Hey, no, that can't be true. You're mistaken, Mweri. It can't be Zumari.
Inspector Mwamto? Inspector Mwamto? Inspector Mwamto, Zumari must be Awombo's murderer. Can't you see? All the evidence points to him. He had a reason to resent the chief. He was the last person to see him and the first to see him again after he disappeared.
It sounds plausible. But there's one thing that doesn't add up. If Zumari killed Chief Awombo because of a historical grudge over land, why did he agree to inform the police when he and Pambo found the body? Isn't that just plain stupid?
True, but Zumari knew that the finger of blame would automatically point at Gamble. After all, Chief Awombo and Mr. Gamble were hardly the best of friends.
Yeah, that's also possible. And of course, there was the reward of 1 million for whoever found the chief. Wow, I'm impressed, Mweri.
Pambo is innocent. Release him from his cell. You need to arrest and question Zumari.
Not so fast, Private Detective. What you say makes sense, but we need proof, hard evidence. I need to bring Zumari in for questioning.
Oh, confession.
Yes, if he confesses, so much the better. This case has given me sleepless nights.
You're not the only one.
Maybe when all this is over, we could have a cup of coffee together, you know? Mary, it wouldn't hurt if we got to know each other better.
I'm sorry to disappoint you, but...
No. It's fine. What was I thinking? Forget I said anything.
I just wanted to say, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I don't drink coffee. I like tea.
Really? Well, tea it is then.
Thank you, Inspector Mwamto. I have to go now. I hope I can trust you with the information I just shared with you.
Of course. You have my word.
What in the world was that?
Oh my God. It's my car. Someone's breaking into my car. Mwamto, help me.
Stay where you are. I'll be right back.
Thank you. Thank you all once again for accepting my invitation to gather here at the Rose Farm, the land of our forefathers. Mm-hmm. As you are all aware, Chief Awombo is supposed to be buried right here tomorrow. The government wants to appease the community with this gesture. Chief Awombo buried in the land of Chongwe. But our miserable living and working conditions will stay the same. And the land will remain in the hands of Roses International. We have to take action.
Yes.
But Zumari, I'm not sure it's such a good idea.
This is not a time for doubt, Ekwaba.
Zumari, my fellow Chongweans, listen, why don't we just let the law take its course?
The law? You think the law will help us, Jembe?
Yes.
We lost our land. Our chief was murdered. Pambo is still in police custody as a scapegoat because the real killer is Mr. Gamble. Yes. And you talk about the law? From now on, this is the law.
Yes, yes.
The law.
Yes. A machete? Yes.
There are enough here for each of us, including you, Ekwaba and Jembe. It is time to take back what belongs to us.
Yes. Yes.
Guys, please, don't do this. If you live by the sword, you die by the sword.
Yes. True. Yes. But what's better? To fight for what's rightfully ours, or continue to live as beggars in our own land?
Fight.
By tomorrow evening, we'll either have reclaimed the land of Chongwe or joined our chief in the afterlife.
Yes.
This is incitement. Zumari, you're calling on us to destroy private property, perhaps even to kill innocent people. I can't be part of this.
Coward.
You are not going anywhere. You are either with us or against us, Jembe.
Yes.
Which side are you on?
That question from Zumari concludes this episode of Land of Chongwe. Will his plan to retake the land of Roses International by force succeed? Is Zumari guilty of murdering Chief Awombo as Mweri believes? The plot thickens in the next episode. You can always listen to this or previous episodes again by visiting our website at dw.com/crimefighters or on Facebook. Bye for now.
And here on Africa Link, a reminder of our top stories before we leave you. Faustin Archange Touadéré has been sworn in as president of the Central African Republic, pledging to end years of violent turmoil. And we've also been hearing about soaring inflation in South Sudan as the country struggles to emerge from civil war. We welcome your comments on this programme. You can send a text message to country code 49 160 957 59510 and email to feedback.africa@dw.com or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. That's Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. From me, Mark Caldwell, thank you for listening and bye now.